You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
What's up, listeners and supporters of the Ain't Hard to Tell podcast? We need some help from you, and it won't take up too much of your time. As we grow, we always want to hear your feedback, so take a minute or two to fill out a short anonymous survey. The survey link is right in the episode notes for this podcast. It's easy and takes less than 5 minutes. As always, we thank you for your continued support.
Stell Podcast, episode 191. Dexter Henry, Ryan Fonseca here.
Jesus.
Yeah, 191. That means we're getting old together in this. That's what's going on. We're getting old together. You know, before you give me some story about how, well, this happened when I was in middle school and I was in college and makes me feel old. So
look, I'm just going to say on the front end, we are open for business. So as we approach 200 episodes, like,
we're here,
and then I'm going to reiterate what I said last time. You might be hearing from us a lot, especially me, in the fall pretty soon. So
yeah, might be some things. But one of the best things about doing this podcast is we get to have a lot of fantastic guests, people that we've worked with in the sports journalism industry. But one of the things, like, when guests come back, it's great when guests come back. But you know what? It's great when guests come back. And they have leveled up. They're in a different place than the last time we saw them. And our guest today is, I would say, my favorite feature writer in terms of sports. Marin Fader joins us this time on the Ain't Hard to Tell podcast. Marin, good to see you again. Second time I got to see you in a week, which is more than I've seen you in the past year. How are you doing? And this time, Marin, we'll get to how you're doing. But I want to let the people know, the last time you saw Marin, she was working for a different outlet. She was still doing feature writing, but this time she's a published author of Giannis, the Improbable Rise of the NBA MVP, Marin Fader. Marin, how are you doing?
Wow, that was such a great intro. It's so good to see you guys. I'm good. I'm excited. I'm, you know, dealing with this release. I can't believe it. You know, it's kind of surreal. You work on something for so long and then it's just out. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it's got to be. So Marin's book, for everybody who does not know, and you can catch, I spoke with her before the book dropped on the NBA Exchange. She was kind enough to join me on that. And she was in a different place then. And then the book dropped and it's available to everyone. Came out on Tuesday. Marin, what has it been like since the book dropped? Because I know things had to change. It was pre-book, you know, before Giannis' book, and now it's after Giannis' book. What has it been like since the book dropped for you?
Yeah, it's been just crazy. They ran an excerpt in the New York Times and Washington Post, which like made my parents cry, which was really nice to hear that they're proud of me. It's just crazy. And people just posting photos of their books, like this one guy, like here from the Philippines and holding up the book. It just like really touches my heart. It's just been so crazy, but I'm also like exhausted. You know, I've just been doing like a month long podcast tour thing just because, you know, the Bucks were in the playoffs and, you know, the book was so timely. So yeah, it's been such a whirlwind. I feel so grateful.
Are you like over doing these podcasts and talking to people about the book? I know you're not annoyed of us because we're so great, but are you annoyed at this at all?
I'm not annoyed. You guys are amazing. No, it's a privilege. You know, there's a lot of people that are like, man, I wish I could go on said podcast. And so I know that I'm just like very, very lucky. I just need to come up with fresh anecdotes for these podcasts. I feel like I'm just saying the same thing. I have to get better. I need to improve. I need a nap. But no, it's a really cool experience. You know, like I said, I just can't believe it. You know, I really didn't think this day would like ever happen.
Yeah, it's interesting for me too, and I know Brian has stuff to think because you know both you guys being friends, both of you this year publishing books, and it coming out. So for one, I want to say as a friend to just see that has been dope. You know what I mean? Anytime your friends write something and you see it published, I know it feels good. Is there any difference in the feeling for you now that you are a published author? Like, Brian, you could chime in on this too, because you now have published author next to your name too. Any difference in feelings for you guys with this?
You go first, Brian. Tell them what the title of your book is.
Well, look, it won't nearly be as successful because, you know, it's a slow burn with fiction.
Heavy eye roll.
I mean, it's true. But, you know. Doggo heist victims taking up space.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, look, and this is something I wanted to get into with Mirren here because we've texted about this like throughout the year at various different points, redundant. She did 222, right, Mirren? 222 interviews for that?
221.
Whatever. Yeah. I just gave you the extra one. So it and Thank reached you. Out to a whole bunch of different people. Like, it's a different kind of process where you're reaching out to all these people. There's a lot of anxiety that goes into that, I would imagine, Mirren. Mm-hmm. And which, you know, obviously I want you to speak to. And then from my end, it's just like coming up with all the shit because it's fictional. But then the anxiety that comes with wanting it to be realistic, getting things right, getting things appropriate. And when you're self-publishing, there's a special set of circumstances that come with that in terms of, like, you don't have, you know, a substantial amount of help because you're doing it yourself. So then there's the anxiousness that comes with that. And, you know, Mirren could speak to this as well, just doing all of this in a pandemic. And that being something that is sort of lingering around all of this because, you know, I would imagine that of those 200-something interviews, not a lot of them were in person, if any of them, right? So there's that element as well. But yeah, I mean, there are some differences there, but similar levels of stress, I will say, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the anxiety is just so real. It's like, you're so nervous, like, you know, am I doing it right? Am I, you know, it's a new experience. You know, I've been a long form writer for a long time and, you know, I'm using the same skills, but it's like, same language, different dialect, you know, and those differences, like, really, it was kind of like learning on the fly. And like, yeah, the pandemic was just really hard, you know, I was really isolated. You know, just I live alone. And so it was just a lot of like me time and just waking up super early and interviewing somebody at like 6 a.m. our time in Los Angeles. And, you know, because in Greece, it would be nighttime there. And so, you know, it was just a lot of hustling. But you're right, like books, it's just a different level of anxiety. You know, like if you make a mistake on an online article, they can change it in like 2 seconds. It just kind of like doesn't work like that with a published book. And so there's something about it that just feels more official. And, you know, to state the obvious, we're going from one long form story, which is 4,000 words, to 120,000 words, 15 chapters. So a book is essentially 15 long forms. So it was just hard to essentially like not write 15 disparate stories, but like find a way to connect all of these into one thing that feels like you're, you know, going to a place and then it, you know, has to grab your attention. You know, you don't want somebody to give up on page 100.
Right. No, nobody wants that to happen. You want
please don't give up.
Pages. Well, that's the thing too. Like, one,
stick with me.
Yeah, and releasing it during the summer. It's like, you know,
right?
What are people's habits at this point? And you know, again, during a pandemic, releasing a book in the summer where it's like now everybody wants to go back outside. We'll see what happens in the fall in terms of like, you know, how that'll affect things. But there's that element as well. One of the other things I wanted to ask was just like, you know, getting to be an author at this point, was this something that you thought would come later on, or did this come right on time, or did you think that you would get to this point sooner? Like, what was sort of the timeline that you envisioned in terms of getting to this point?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, people make fun of me for my stupid timeline, but I was definitely one of those people with ridiculous expectations of, like, by 30, I need to do this, that, and the third. And, you know, right? No one's toxic. I am not endorsing this. It's toxic. It's bad. But I was one of those people. And I was like, I want to do this before I'm 30. And, you know, when I pitched the book, I was 28. So, you know, I just turned 30. And so it did happen. But honestly, it happened not because I was at this age, but it happened because it organically came from a story. You know, I had been trying to come up with, you know, random ideas and stuff, just like, oh, should I write a book on this person or that person? And it just never worked. But then when I just was focused on the work that I was doing and did this BR story on Alex and Giannis, it was just a natural progression, and the timing was right, and it felt right. And even though I think most people do their books obviously much later in life, I don't know, I was just super lucky.
Yeah, I was wanted to ask about that too, in terms of, you know, you told me a little bit before about how it came about, but it came from the Bleacher Report story that you did on Giannis. But when did you feel or had that inspiration to be like, okay, this can actually be something more, right? Because it's one thing to have a great story and a great idea, but then knowing what you said, knowing that you can put this into 120,000 words, when did you feel like, okay, this is really possible?
Just shook her head when you said the number.
When I'm like hearing it, I'm like, oh, like I need to like sit, like I'm seated, but I need to lie down when I hear this. It's just like triggering, traumatic, you know? Oh my goodness. Yeah, a visceral body reaction to that. Yeah, it's
sorry.
I'm trying to enjoy my week. No, I'm just kidding. I had been looking to do a book, and I had met a really cool literary agent earlier that year. So the story came out in like June, July, I can't remember. And then I had met the agent in January of that year. And so he was like, keep in touch, like, let me know if there's any stories that you think would be good for a book. And when it came out, it was just like on my mind, you know, trying to find that idea. And I think that because the response I got was so positive, and people were like, wow, I had no idea about that, about Giannis. You know, I just thought, perfect. It's the human story and it's sellable. It's like, as you know, Brian, like the thing with books is like you have to have a good idea and it also has to sell. Like publishers do not like it. It's just really this really tough combination. You know, it's not once in a while there's a book that's a really good idea that's super unique that just takes off in ways publishers won't expect, like The Boys in the Boat, which was about like a you know, a rowing team in the 20s. But like most of the time it has to be on like some superstar. So I just really liked that it had, of course, that, but it had this human dimension, and that's what I try to center in my work.
Yeah, and you definitely can see that in what you've seen people talk about the book. I'm going to get through it next week, hopefully, and I really can't wait to delve in. But there was something I did today, right? Because, Miren, I pre-ordered this book a while ago. Of course, we were going to support you and get the book. But I pre-ordered the book. And then
I'm still waiting for mine, though. Like, okay. Mine is not even here yet. What are you talking about? Look at Miren.
Amazon!
That made Miren anxious.
Yeah. That's what it is. The other day I ordered some shit from Amazon and it came in like three different deliveries. That shit was annoying. But anyway, that's annoying.
But you need to Miren's book. Amazon, please get that book to mine as soon as possible. Miren, I went back.
Do I need to tweet at Amazon on Facebook?
No. That's the only place my shit is at. So I need to be in their good graces for right now, you know, because I can't afford to get it at all these, you know. Maybe we'll see when the second one comes out, hopefully in 2022.
So Miren, I hadn't been on Amazon in terms of looking at your book since I went to pre-order. So I went back to the link today and it said Amazon bestseller. How does it feel to be an Amazon bestseller already a couple days after this is dropped?
And Miren, I told you that was going to happen. Like, I told you that shit, like, maybe 2 weeks ago. I was like, you know it's going to be a bestseller. You're like, oh, my God, stop. I'm anxious. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what did I tell you?
that's a Miren response for sure.
But I knew. I knew. Like, I just knew. You know what I mean? Because I knew it was going to, like, be something that resonated instantly, because it's, you know, it's different.
I am deeply uncomfortable right now. I you know, that's how I am. That's such a me response, you know. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. I think so, like, you know Jeff Perlman is like somebody that I'm pretty close to, and he said to me last night, like, did you know, like, check your ranking? And I was like, no, like, I don't check my ranking. And he's like, this is the cardinal sin. Of course you should be checking your ranking. Everyone checks their ranking, but I don't check my ranking. You know, I think, like, it's amazing that it's doing well, and I am just so thankful and grateful. But that to me is so much, you know, more important that people are resonating with it and that they are liking it than, like, bestseller. You know, I think for me, of course, I want to be a New York Times bestseller. That would be a dream come true. But it's such a, I mean, it's not a long shot right now, but it's not something that I think will happen. I think it's a nice dream, you know, but that's not important. I think it's just really cool that people are excited about reading, and it just makes me feel so happy that they would, like, spend their money on something I wrote. Like, that's so cool.
See, I like you putting in perspective like that, Marin. And if I'm obviously haven't done what you and Brian have done yet. It will happen one day. I will be writing a book that is in the plans. But I would be like you, Marin. I'm not checking the numbers. I wouldn't do it. Like, I don't want to know. I don't need to be on top of it. I think I'm like you too. When I put out something, whether it's a sideline story, long form piece, I just want to see how it connects with people. And I'm fine with that. Whatever comes after it, awards, whatever else, all good. But I get it. Colin Kaepernick.
Women's boxing.
Puerto Rico.
So you wrote this book. What do you, I think one of the things when you're writing a biography is you want people to find out some new things they didn't know, connect with this person that you're writing about. What do you think it is that people would learn and connect with about Giannis that they might not have known before?
I mean, I think the whole childhood experience has been so unexplored. It was like, okay, he sold trinkets by the street, but, you know, I was like, okay, what streets? Where? You know, how much did they make? What did they eat? You know, I just think all of these things were unexplored. And so the book, like, really answers a lot of those questions. It definitely shed light on the racism that he experienced growing up, especially as a teen at away games. They would shout really awful insults at him. And also just about, like, how hard it was being undocumented in this country that does not offer people of color born to migrants from other countries. Even if you're born in Greece, you don't get citizenship. So for Giannis, it was really, really hard and painful at times. And it just, it made his rise all the more miraculous, because he literally did not have the necessary paperwork to compete at the highest teams in his own country. He couldn't travel with a passport because he didn't have papers. So, you know, the whole thing is just luck. It's pure luck. And I think people also don't realize that, like, when he got his citizenship papers, it's only because it was clear he was going to go to the NBA. Like, they would not have given him citizenship if he was just another Black migrant. So I think people don't realize how much of a fiasco that was to get the papers. I mean, the whole agents and the team were going to the Nigerian embassy. There was a Spanish coach involved that was like, do I need to look into the Spanish government? So it was a big, big process with a lot of red tape. And finally, I think people will see a more vulnerable side of Giannis. I mean that in a good way, like emotionally intelligent. I think people realize he's so thoughtful and humble and wonderful. But I think this book really gives you a sense into like what shaped that kind of charismatic personality and sort of like where all that comes from.
It's going to be interesting. Gary, that's the things I'm really intrigued in learning about. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, that's something we talked about the other day in terms of like how he navigated the racial aspect of this. I want to know about the writing process. Like, what was your routine? Because, you know, I have an idea of what this could be like in terms of the very early mornings, the very late nights, just doing things at random times, putting away the phone, blocking off social media, blocking off, you know, YouTube, Netflix, whatever the case may be. So, like, what would be your typical routine, if there even was one, you know, during the, I guess, the heavy writing portion of this?
Yeah, so I couldn't go to my normal coffee shops like normal, you know, when I just said the word normal twice because I'm tired and I'm sorry. I'm just doing fabulously in this interview.
You're doing great.
Thank you. I would wake up super, super early, like 5 a.m. and start the interviews at like 6. And I would try to go like 6, 7, 8, 9, or if they were longer, like only do a couple in the morning. And then I would just have to like write here. And it was hard because normally I report the whole thing and then I write, but this, I had 20,000 words a month due from the publisher. So I had to do it at the same time, which is like really, really hard. So it's funny you talk about like little process things. I'm a baker. I don't know if I've told you that. I love baking and I love it I just love it in general, but I also love it because it gets me out of my thinking brain and I can like work with my hands and stuff. So because I had this insane deadline every month and all of this time here, I would bake while I transcribed, because like sometimes people just go on and on, you know, and so you don't have to sit there like transcribing every little thing. And I would just like stir it, come back, like, I don't know if that... I would just do so much baking and I would like leave presents for all my friends at their doorsteps because I couldn't see them, but it, you know, it got me outside. But for the most part, it was just like being so relentless about my reporting and always making the extra call and just having, you know, so much time to myself, you know. And I also had a full-time job and then I changed jobs. So I had to also, it's not like I could just not do that. So I was reporting for that like in the afternoon. And then at night I would write all over again. And I would drink coffee at really weird hours, like at night. So I was just like not sleeping. It was tough.
I like that coffee is the constant for you.
I know.
Yeah, Maren. Coffee has to be the constant for you, for sure.
But real quick, yes. because you mentioned the deadlines, and I wanted to like add on to that real quick. Because that's something that, like, with a publisher versus self-publishing is different. Like, the deadlines that I would have would be, like, self-imposed, just psychotic right. ones that we joked about, like, before before we actually started this podcast. So how was it just navigating through that as well? Because there were these rigorous deadlines at a month's time. You had a date also very early, like, and that's another thing working with a big publisher is, like, several months in advance, it's like, all right, here's the release date versus where I could basically pick my own date for better or for worse. I'm not even saying which one is better, which one's worse, but I'm just, you know, trying to gauge like more of the differences here.
Yeah, I mean, it was tough because if I had the luxury of reporting the whole thing and then writing it, I would have a sense like, okay, this is the overarching thing. This is what it's about. Then I'm going to move this here. I'm going to have that there. I'm going to like know what to do because I know what I have. It's very hard to know where things go when you don't know what you have because you're not done getting it, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
it was very hard to be like, okay, all of this stuff is going to go in this chapter because I don't know like how that connects to the rest of the book. So I just tried to like break it down chronologically. You know, I ended up rewriting a lot of it. So I would turn in this thing, but it would obviously change later. I think I rewrote this book like 4 times. And because it's hard, you know, when I started the process, like, there was so much I didn't know about him. And then when I was on chapter 14, I got all this new stuff that needed to be added into chapter 1, 2, and 3. Mm. You know, I got one of his best friends like super late in the game, like a month before deadline. So, wow. You know, so it was just like, it just created a pressure because I felt like, okay, this is due, but it's not like going to be final. Like, why is it due? You know, and I'm not complaining. I'm just like, it was hard for me to like conceptualize the whole thing because I could only focus on this like thing right now. And then like doing my normal job, you know? Right. So.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something else we wanted to get to, actually. Go ahead, Dex.
No, I was glad you brought that up, Mirren, in terms of your process and when Brian had asked that, because I think some people may forget, for a lot of authors and writers that we know, especially in the sports world, you're also working your normal job too. You're still pumping out feature stories. You're still managing all that. And that, you know, that's a challenge of itself. But I want to, especially because we have you and Brian here, and both of you guys have released books this year. Brian has written fiction, and you do nonfiction with a biography. Would you ever think about doing fiction? Have you ever thought about doing fiction writing? What do you think are some of the differences? I know you haven't delved into it, but for both you guys, what do you think are some of the differences of why you might ever want to dabble in the other?
I mean, I don't think I'm capable of writing fiction. Like, it's just like so hard, and there's no way I could write fiction. But I also don't, I don't want... It would be so bad. It would be so terrible.
Mary's like, I wouldn't even try it. No.
No. I think
I wouldn't read my own book. I would not read my own book.
I think you're being too modest and you need a hype man.
Serious.
I think you can do it. You like, you know, obviously, first of all, you're one of the best writers pound for pound on the planet. One. Two, I'm sure you have an imaginative side. You know what I mean?
So anxious.
Watching, I know. I'm trying to get her. I'm trying to get her to turn red or pink. You know what I'm saying?
I'm gonna turn so red. I'm gonna be a tomato. Keep going. I'm gonna be red as Dex's wall.
You've watched TV, movies. You know what I'm saying? You consume a lot of content. You have a different way of thinking. You could do it. Look, Mirren. Let me tell you.
I'm with Mirren on this.
I'm a psycho. So a lot of my ideas came from, well, one, just sort of being around and having always wanting to write fiction. But I was creating video game characters at like age 10, 11, 12 and writing little stories on their backgrounds and shit. I was doing that kind of stuff. So maybe I'm the weird one here just trying to get you to join the dark side so I could just back off it.
You're not weird. I love fiction. I think most of what I read is fiction. I read like a book per week and it's always fiction.
You're the only
who's the weird person here? Yes.
Not the reader. Read it. People need to read more. You're not weird at all.
I agree. You're probably the only guest that we've had that like has a bookshelf that I believe you've actually read every book that's behind you.
I just got a new bookshelf over there. Just half cooking baking books and half regular books.
Nice.
So, no, it's true. I love fiction books, but I can't see myself ever doing it. But, you know, I think the work that I do on a serious note is kind of a hybrid between fiction and nonfiction. And I don't mean in the sense that there's things that are untrue in my stuff. Please don't nobody run with that, as the internet will do. But I think that... It's only because we're really good friends that this interview is the way it is. I use like create. It's called creative nonfiction, and they put the word creative nonfiction because it's lyrical like fiction, because it's got writerly devices like fiction. It's like it's supposed to be musical. It's supposed to like be descriptive. It's supposed to be, you know, descriptive. It's not like a really boring like academic treatise, you know? So I think it's like, that's why even though it's a biography, it's nonfiction, same with all my work, it is technically called creative nonfiction. And I can use like that type of, you know, language and fun stuff. So
Mirren, when it comes to books, I'm sure people have asked you this throughout this whole process. What are the goals for the books? And I want to put out here what I would like to see as a goal for this book. All I want is very simple. It's very simple for me. I want Marin to have a bigger bookshelf than the one she has behind her, so she can. So, so we just want to just get more books that Marin can read.
Manifest.
That's a good doable goal, right? But I know for you, you have to, like, you talked about this a bit before. You have to like how you're seeing people connect with the book on social media, sending you messages, pictures of the book. You got to think more people are going to even talk about this as they sit with it longer and get closer to the next NBA season.
Oh, yeah.
Have you thought about it? Have you added any other goals beyond that besides people just connecting it? Or is that just it and you want it to just be there and people to have that connection?
I mean, first of all, it's like so surprising. People are like, I finished. I was like, huh? Like, it came out like 24 hours ago. Like
400 pages.
Wasn't that good? No, I just...
That means they couldn't put it down. They kept had to keep turning the pages. They had to, yeah.
Come on. But I, you know, I would love, first of all, I would love to manifest your bookshelf thing. That just made me so happy. I have several bookshelves, and the thought of adding more just warms my nerdy heart. Your listeners are going to be like, why did you have this girl on? She's the worst. I want people to look at Giannis and see the full complexity of him. I think that his story is really just portrayed as this sugar-coated fairy tale, and it really glosses, because it is so inspiring and so amazing, I think people really gloss over the really difficult parts and I should say the uncomfortable parts for some. And I hope people leave this with a nuanced, balanced perspective that it is entirely possible for him to love the country that did not always love him and that does not always love him. And both of these things are true. And life is not one or the other. It's totally true that he experienced tons of racism then and now. And he feels a connection to this place because so many people were also not racist to him. Like, I think, you know, that's something I hope people take away. The second thing I hope it starts a dialogue about, you know, potentially what connections he can have with Nigeria. I think the common thread that I heard from a lot of Nigerian journalists I spoke to and just people involved is that, you know, we want a deeper connection with Giannis. You know, these are the Nigerian journalists I talked to. But, you know, so much of his persona and his brand is Greek, you know, the Greek freak. He plays for Greece as well. So I'm just curious, like, will it start any discussion about that? Lastly, I hope that, like, if you know nothing about basketball, you can still say, wow, I really enjoyed that book and I didn't have to know basketball to like it. And I hope that if you love basketball, you feel like there's a sufficient enough hoops, new information in there for you too. And then just selfishly, I hope this allows me to just continue writing books for the rest of my life.
There we go. Some ego. You know what I'm saying?
That's what you want to hear.
Manifestation.
I'm all about that.
I have some ideas, but like we'll keep that.
We'll
off,
talk
off.
About.
Okay. We'll keep that off air.
Except Brian, when Marin came on the NBA Exchange, I asked Marin about what was next and, you know, what she had next for the book. And so Marin, I've done some thinking in the last few days since the book has dropped. And I think, yes, I'm glad. Thank you, Greg, for putting the camera on for me for this. I think that Marin should be the person to write the Ain't Hard to Tell biography. The story of a podcast of a great guy like myself working with a jerk like Brian and surviving through these times and these rough interviews and all these things we have to do. Come on, Marin. You should be the person to write and tell this story. It's Marin Fader, Amazon bestseller. Writing the story. That's the person who should do it. What do you say, Mary? Can we sign you up? Can we sign you up here on the Ain't Hard to Tell podcast for this?
I have to compliment you on your smooth delivery. I thought you were about to give me some like really good idea. Like let
oh,
me
are you
take
saying
notes.
This is a bad idea? Oh man. Damn. the silence, folks. That's everything. That's everything you need to know. I feel like when I'm in LA and I want to like join Marin in a cafe for a latte, it's not going to happen anymore. So that's your idea.
I hate you.
Okay, so I mean, I should be the one mad here. You're not going to write the Ain't Hard to Tell biography. It's okay. It's all right.
I asked you to send me a latte picture, and what did you do?
Did he send me a latte picture? Brian, we can't hear you. I think your mic.
He said no. There are no words to describe. He said absolutely not. No picture was sent.
I said I don't even really drink lattes, so I'm not sure if I'm a part of this.
So basically what Marin's saying here before we let her get out, because she's got to run, Marin is saying, because I did not deliver on the fact of sending her a latte picture, she will not deliver on even possibly thinking about writing the story of the Ain't Hard to Tell podcast. All right.
What can you say?
I also want to point out, since you brought up the Giannis racial thing, we both wrote books about race, guys. I just want to point out yet another parallel.
Plug your book one more time so people can know what it is and where.
Are you being sarcastic?
No. She's being serious. I'm asking you to plug your book.
We're cool. So I'm just saying, if you're being sarcastic,
Brian, show the people.
Doggo Heights, victims are taking up space. If you're interested in a conversation about race and complexities, Latino experience, and there's a Black Latino here. Wait, on this side. Here we go. And that's important because there are some other depictions of us that don't necessarily cover all sides. Then, yeah, you can get that on Amazon now. It's only $20 and still.
Get that book.
I can't believe you thought I was sarcastic. I'm just taking that in.
You know, it's cool. I also want to point out that 400 pages. I only got up to like I got up to 300, and then I was like, let me chop this down a little bit. I'm at 268. You know what I mean? So
you gotta level up like Merritt, Brian. You gotta level up.
Part two, I was trying to keep it tighter, but I'm working on the second book right now, and that one might be longer than part one. So
wow.
I want to have part two out next year, but you know, some things are holding me back from that right now. So we might have to make adjustments on how the work-life balance goes moving forward.
Work-life balance? What's that?
What is that work-life balance? I was writing a book.
Did I hear you correctly?
Yeah, you heard him correctly. Well, Marin, we know you're taking ideas, so I'm going to try to come back with a better idea than an podcast story, because
I have one already. I'm going to text it to you, and you've probably already thought of it, but still.
So we'll see about that. But right now, I had to hold it up because I had the book behind me. This is the book. I have a copy. This is an Amazon best-selling author. See at the top, it says Marin Fader for people who are watching this podcast. Giannis, The Improbable Rise of NBA MVP is out now for everybody to get. Please go support Marin Fader. She's a fantastic writer. I haven't read this book yet, but I know it's going to be fantastic, and I'll be texting Marin next week about it. And somehow, some way, the next time Marin comes back on the podcast, she'll either let us know about a better idea, or maybe she will come around and write the story of the Ain't Hard to Sell podcast. Maybe she will. Marin, thank you. We are honored to have you here to join us once again, and we are thrilled for your success. We are rooting for you, and we know you're going to go on to continue to write many more books and great things. So thank you so much for joining me. And I owe you several pictures of lattes and cafes.
And just a latte, but yes. Thank you so much, you guys. much love to you, my friends.
Appreciate you, Marin. Thank you. Be well, okay?
Thank you.